Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel for this Friday morning. It's the 21st of November. Welcome to the program and welcome to Friday. I hope you're excited. We have a lot going on today. We have a lot to talk about, and let me introduce our panel to you, and we'll get right to the subjects at hand, the many subjects at hand. We begin with WAMC's Alan Chartok. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Joe. Always great to see you here, particularly on a Friday when things are really always winding down for the week.
I don't know what that means.
Well, by the way, neither do I.
Whoa, what's that? Nice. And we're off.
But you know, every week has a beginning, a middle, and an end, except for the
Fun Drive
Unfinished Symphony, which has a beginning. Does it have a middle? No, it can't have a middle unless it has an end.
An end, that's right.
Yeah, right.
We're on that, and check. We got it.
We're on that.
We're on that.
Are we?
Ray Graff is here. Good morning, Ray.
Hello.
How are you? Uh-huh. And anything pithy to say?
No. Nope. Did you say pithy?
Yeah.
That's what
okay.
I was
all right. No. Then no. Absolutely
that's
not.
That's what I was going to ask.
And Rosemary?
I have nothing pithy or profound.
Okay. Rosemary Armeo, of course, is an investigative reporter. She is also a journalism professor at the University at Albany, the State University of New York at Albany, I believe.
Indeed.
Is the correct way we are supposed to say that. Good morning, and a reminder that you can join in our conversation, wamc.org/roundtable. Go to the website. You'll see the panel listed for today, the 21st. Just click on that, and you can comment on the many items that we will speak about today. You can also write us an email directly at roundtable@wamc.org. Now, you may say, oh, what's the difference? Well, in the one case, if you do roundtable@wamc.org, it just goes to us to read here in the studio. However, if you want everyone to see it and you want a permanent record of your comment,
That makes it sound bad. It's fun to put it on that one. I answer it.
I
know
saw you
Libby
doing that
looks
this
at
week.
Yeah, yeah, it's really because people have good questions that we don't have time. You read them, Alan, you know this, to get into.
Oh, I try to read them.
Yeah, I mean, you try to read them, but we can't really respond and debate, but you can if you put them online. It's a great
I thought
a
it was
great communication.
Fairly daring of you to invite people to your class on the weapon.
I have nothing to hide.
But still. Do you want people just coming in off the street, hanging out?
If it's okay with the fire marshal, yeah.
All right.
I thought it was nice for you to give people your home address. That was nice. All right. So let us begin and talk about what's going on here. We begin with immigration overhaul. The president spoke last night, daring Congress and acts to overhaul immigration. He chose confrontation over conciliation on Thursday as he asserted the powers of the Oval Office to reshape the nation's immigration system. According to the New York Times, he all but dared members of next year's Republican-controlled Congress to reverse his actions on behalf of millions of immigrants. In a 15-minute address from the East Room of the White House that sought to appeal to a nation's compassion, Mr. Obama told Americans that deporting millions is not who we are, and cited scripture saying, "We shall not oppress a stranger, for we know the heart of a stranger. We were strangers once too."
I love it.
I did too.
I love it. I think he's got them. You know, basically, he wanted Congress to come along. Now, look, we know that the Senate passed a conciliatory bipartisan bill. We know that Boehner in the past, the speaker, has made remarks about getting it done and doing something. But his right wing colleagues who are all scared of primaries, put the kibosh on that. So we know that they could do it if they wanted to do it. Instead, they want it both ways. They want to say, we won't do it, and we don't. And even though we're making remarks like, if you could, you should, and then we could work with you, and now we'll never work with you. Well, they weren't working with him in the first place. It's absurd.
And he also waited to make this announcement till after the midterms because Democrats were afraid, oh, we'll get killed, we'll lose control of the House. Well, they lost it anyway. So he finally came out and did a very bold action. I liked the speech. I like that there was no violence in Oklahoma or any place else. In fact, there were marches in front of the White House. No anarchy. No, in fact, there were marches in front of the White House with people saying "Gracias, Presidente Obama."
John Boehner is speaking right now. And he spoke last night saying, by ignoring the will of the American people, President Obama has cemented his legacy of lawlessness and squandered what little credibility he had left.
And he's calling him a king and an emperor. Hey, Ray, you haven't said anything this morning.
Thanks for bringing me in, Alan. I appreciate it. I think it's interesting to draw a distinction between executive order and executive action.
Oh, yes.
Now, as I understand it, yesterday's announcement was pertaining to executive actions. All right. So executive order. And we had a great piece on our website about this. It's up there now in the skybox if you want to take a look right at the top. The title is, so what is an executive action anyway? And I'll quote here from political writer Tom Merce. This is from the article on our website. Most executive actions carry no legal weight. Those that do actually set policy can be invalidated by the courts or undone by legislation passed by Congress. Merce writes, the terms executive action and executive order are not interchangeable. Executive orders are legally binding and published in the Federal Register. A good way to think of executive actions is a wish list of policies the president would like to see enacted. So if that is true, if we take that as written, is this just a case of political angling and political theater?
Well, that certainly is what the Republicans will call it. On the other hand, it's pretty effective if you think about it, because I think by their vitriolic reaction to it, an almost invitation, as we say, to chaos, they may never get a substantial Hispanic turnout on their side of the aisle for a long, long time. But then there's the other thing, Ray, and that is it's the right thing to do. Now, if the president gets up there and he says, I dare them, basically, to reverse me, he's saying, I recognize that they could. But I think that they know that they're between a rock and a hard place.
I question whether the Republicans really are opposed to what Obama did. This is very limited reform. It allows children who have been brought here to stay here. It allows families whose children are American citizens or permanent residents to stay with them. Really, are Republicans against that? Isn't this a way out for them that they get this and they don't have to have reform?
And by the way, Rosemary, there's more to it. Because Republicans know that they're farmers, many of whom are Republicans,
or
need the help. They know that there are people who run major factories that are in their constituency, need the help, and nobody else will do it. So you may have a point.
Some of the political theater is on the part of Republicans, who now get to call him a king, but they in place as a policy they're not really opposed to.
Yeah, no, here goes Ray.
And getting to your point, Rosemary, Lindsey Graham's comments are interesting in that he says, well, what about all the others? I don't know if you can pull that quote up, Joe, but he said, well, what about all those left out for this action?
There's this affects something like half of the 11 million illegals in this country, whatever we call them.
So wait a second, Ray. Let me make sure I get what the import of your question is. He said sardonically,
Because you're all-knowing? Feel free to educate.
Bile dripping from his mouth. Yes. Let me see if I get what you're saying here. These are the same guys who don't want anything, seem to want anything done. So the president gives them a humanitarian half a loaf. Now the same guys, hypocrites that they are, stand up and say, and spit in your eye, and say, but only half are being handled.
Well, no, isn't this illustrative of the point of political theater here?
Yeah.
This is what I was saying to Rosemary.
But
if it was political theater, would they be talking about the lawlessness and how they're wrangling?
Well, that's one,
That totally plays to the conservatives and to the right side. Don't forget, the Republicans, we talk about it here all the time, are very divided. And what to do about immigration is something they are not decided in their own party. The ball's rolling now. I just don't think there's a whole lot of disagreement about what exactly Obama did. It's not like he's keeping adults in or recent immigrants. It's a really safe thing he did.
But Lindsey Graham, for goodness sakes, talking about, well, it's only a half a loaf. These are the guys who haven't allowed any of this to happen. What's going on? I mean, how much can you get away with?
I put in Lindsey Graham loaf, and I couldn't.
You know, he didn't say half a loaf.
Oh, okay.
That was Alan. If you put in Alan loaf, we'll see what comes out. Delicious. I think they're serving that next door, actually.
In my house, my parents put three hard-boiled eggs in the middle of the meatloaf.
Oh, yeah?
Does that have anything? Yeah. Although
why?
It was delicious because they knew he liked hard-boiled eggs. And
so like a surprise.
You slice it, and then you get a slice of meatloaf plus a little bit of egg. That's
so
what this is all like.
We have everything on the round table, including recipes.
That's right. So, hints from Heloise next.
Strange recipes.
After we have...
You said loaf. Loaf.
We have a great household cleaner concoction coming up next after these messages. Hit it, Dave.
Kampala once I ordered.
Support for WAMC comes from Center for Better Hearing, Glens Falls, New York. Doctors Susan Boja and Kara Bedore providing comprehensive hearing and hearing aid services, hearingbest.com. And Pioneer Post and Beam, a non-kit post and beam builder in Belchertown, Massachusetts, designing and erecting customized barns, artist studios, garages, and additions. PioneerPostAndBeam.com.
Talking about this yesterday, and I just wanted to.
Keep it going. It's Young and the Restless all of a sudden. It's nice.
What happened now?
Nothing. It's just nothing. you had to be there. The music swelled very, as if we were going to give a grand announcement. I think. Yes.
Do you have an executive action that you'd like to announce?
No, but I do.
Okay, what's that?
I'm just teasing.
Oh. All right.
See you on the executive.
Eggs.
A little reminder. We need it.
President Obama's primetime address, we were talking about this yesterday. The White House asked for the networks for time at 8 p.m., and all the networks replied and said, well, not all the networks, the broadcast networks, ABC, NBC, Fox, and CBS, said, no thanks. And they went back to their programs, Big Bang Theory, Bones, and the like. Hmm. So, The Biggest Loser, Glory Days, was on, this old House Hour on PBS as well.
Boy.
And
that's
so
still on?
So there you go. The politics of the announcement provided an additional excuse for networks that didn't want to see the ratings deflate on Thursday, according to Politico. A network insider says there was agreement among the broadcast networks that this was overtly political. The White House has tried to make a comparison to a time that all the networks carried President Bush in prime time, also related to immigration. But that was a bipartisan announcement, and this was an overtly political move by the White House.
Nonsense.
Is it their call to make, do you think?
And that's also monopolistic, if you think about it. You know, they're all getting together to do this. On the other hand...
Collusion, you mean?
Yeah. Well, collusion. But I, on the other hand, say that's why we have WAMC. Because we're never going to make that kind of assessment.
It is appalling that the networks are right, that had they interrupted, there would have been complaints from thousands, millions of readers.
Well, there always is complaints. I mean, you have complaints during the State of the Union address, too, but you don't listen to them.
That's depressing.
No, you don't listen.
And on the other hand, while I think this is wrong, I think they're totally wrong, Obama sort of deserves it. He has been very cavalier in the way he's handled the press. He has reduced the number of press conferences. He has cut back the number of reporters allowed into the White House to take pictures. How come he gets to call when I need you? You have to be there, but I'm not going to let you in to do the things
so
you need
second.
To do.
So wait a second.
It's a little bit of revenge.
So hasn't where Evan, president of the 21st century, been accused of that?
Not to the extent that he has. No.
Well, where are you? I mean, we know who you are. You're one of these press apologists who anything.
I'm a press champion, not an apologist.
Either side.
And I believe that when the president speaks to a national address, the broadcast, all the units should allow
Okay,
time,
but on the other hand.
And he should also let them in and have regular news conferences and access to the White House.
Well, we all agree on that now, but then you.
He doesn't.
For some reason, interject. this other part of your thing.
Yeah, I
yes,
think there's some
right
revenge
on the,
on the part
subject.
Of it.
You say, Rosemary, quite correctly and admirably, that you know, the president was right, and the networks were wrong.
However, their action is understandable. That, Alan, is called looking at both sides of the issue.
Oh,
something
oh,
that
hey,
you we stung. Don't often do
Excuse
here.
Me, I have to take the dart out of my kishka.
This is a spear.
That was more than a dart, absolutely.
Yeah, that was.
But, I mean, there are 200 channels, right?
There are 200, yes, right.
If every channel covered it, wouldn't we then be North Korea?
We're not talking about every channel covering it. We're talking about three channels.
We're doing
networks.
The fact is that there are many people in this country who don't have cable television or access to cable television. Broadcast networks.
Was it on public TV?
That's this old house thing.
Oh, so this old house was on instead?
Yeah.
Hodgepodge Lodge or something? Good. Well, we got to see it, and WAMC played it. There are venues, there are avenues of listening to these things. I don't think this is a huge deal.
Well, you know, what happens is every time, Ray, and you know how I love both you and Rosemary.
Yeah,
and
yeah, yeah.
Any kind of back and forth is all that fun. But you know, there really are times that the people who say that the network should do whatever they want, or that the newspapers should do whatever they want, because we have all of these other outlets, people can blog, there are a billion blogs. Yeah, but you got to make a choice about a billion blogs. These are still the three major networks.
Yeah,
and maybe four.
We actually are of accord on that. I don't like that the networks get to decide when the president is speaking national interest and when it's politics. We debate that here. We don't know what it is. How do they know? How do they get to decide?
Well,
it's
president. And what politician doesn't do politics?
Exactly.
I mean, you know, please.
Let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll remove spears. And,
yeah. Eggs.
Right. We'll be back. We welcome your comments, roundtable at WAMC.org or on our website, WAMC.org/roundtable. Rosemary Armeo, Alan Chartok, Ray Graff, I'm Joe Donahue, and we'll be back after this break. Good morning and welcome back to the roundtable. Rosemary and I are having a not an argument.
No, well, it's research.
Research. Rosemary made a statement earlier that this president, President Obama, has not had as many has lowered the number of press
availabilities.
He's been
more inaccessible than other presidents.
Right.
My
statement earlier was that when you look at the modern presidency in the 21st century, and even from the late 90s, so this is Clinton, Bush and Obama, that it's fairly consistent.
Okay.
President Bush had 49 press conferences in his 8 years in office, including the years of 9/11. This president has had 44 with 5.83 years in office.
Okay. I'm going to have to do more research and I will get back to you.
Okay.
He seems to have a much harder reputation with the press for cutting off photographers in the White House and not being available for press interviews. But I'll check it out.
Okay. And we're only and you're absolutely right, because I'm only looking at press conferences and not other press availability.
Right. No, that's good. That's good.
Okay. So I would like to note, however, that when you look at I'm showing Rosemary a graph here, but the average news conferences for a year, you look at Bush, Clinton, and Bush compared to Ford, Carter, and Reagan, and it's almost double.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we're not exactly hitting a time where it's at its record low, I don't think. But anyway, we welcome your letters. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We have a ton of them, so let's go to them.
Okay. And folks, just remember, I'm reading them as we get them. So, you know, sometimes probably I shouldn't be reading them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right? Because you regretted it halfway through?
Yeah. I mean, if I can see some of them in advance, it would be good, but I can't.
Okay.
Okay. So John in Schenectady says, the lack of network coverage gives more strength to soundbites from politicians and pundits. It allows more outrage from a public that doesn't know what was actually said. The general public hears tyrant and unlawful, so it must be true. Well, that's what propaganda is all about. You know, it's a very good question.
I'm sorry. Can I just jump in? I was just thinking about this, too. The other thing, too, that I think it's important to note is we also didn't get to hear the Republican response. There's always a Republican response, and we didn't get to hear that on the networks as well.
Mm-hmm.
So for whatever that's worth, go ahead.
And so Ryan says, anyone have any comments about the hypocrisy of the Senate GOP voting down the feared, quote, big government surveillance dragnet system of the NSA?
Yeah.
Is this the serious story sneaking by as everyone talks about the theatrics of immigration statement of the immigration statement? Well, Ryan, I have to take some issue with your letter in that I don't think it's just theatrics when you're letting 5 million people either stay or get deported from this country and what we do with our Hispanic population. But anyway, that's the way it is. Nancy says PBS Channel 13 in New York City aired the president's speech.
Okay.
Good. Yeah.
Okay. And Roy wrote a letter, which I'm not going to read because I find it offensive, offensive to our women members of our group. Well, it's not worth responding to. Believe me, there are times you don't respond.
Sorry, Roy.
Okay. And we heard from W. Mancini, who says the Albany Public TV station did carry the president's speech last night.
Excellent.
It also included the Republican response. Whatever it's worth.
That's how public broadcasting should roll, yeah?
That's right. You're exactly right. And then we have J. R. White said the same thing. And Julia said, did Al Jazeera cover the speech?
Good question. I bet they did.
They often
it's also
do.
Cable.
Yeah, the only time I really suspect them is on the Mideast stuff. But I think that they do a relatively good job, Al Jazeera, in terms of their coverage.
Lots of great American journalists working for them.
Yeah, they do. They do. We've interviewed some of the head people here on WMS. I have. And, the only time that there was some discussion was over the Mideast.
And even in the Mideast, they bring a perspective that we don't get from other channels. So
well,
they're worth watching.
They do. They do. Roundtable. Good morning, panel. I compare what the president has done to what loving parents would do. For example, if a daughter gives birth to a child out of wedlock, a parent might first become upset. Of course, they may wish the daughter had gotten herself into that situation. They may want to react harshly at first and refuse to acknowledge the unexpected grandchild, but later they realize it's not the child's fault. They make a way to accept their new grandchild. This is similar to what the president has done. And that's all I'm going to read because it's over the
it's very long.
The words.
Yeah.
Right. And Susie says, 6 years ago, after finding out I was pregnant, my husband and I took the decision to enter the U.S. illegally. We didn't want to raise our daughter in a country filled with violence and only wanted the best. The only crime we have ever committed was to enter the country illegally. We listen to the program every morning and stay informed on the elections. We love politics. We would love nothing more than to be able to finally vote. But how can this ever be possible when I fear deportation? I fear living in a country I call home and my taxes, too. Again, it's over the
top. Welcome, Susie.
Yeah, so I'm just going to stop there. And then Ryan says, good morning. In all fairness, what?
I'm reading it as you're reading it.
Oh, okay. Ryan says, good morning.
Don't read ahead, Ryan.
Sorry.
Ryan says, good morning. In all fairness, this old house is a pretty good show. Yes, that's tongue-in-cheek.
By the way, it has now been confirmed that PBS
carried it
and the most PBS affiliates carried it as well. So,
yeah.
For what it's...
And Tony says, Bobby Jindal and Speaker Boehner asked that the president work with them. I called Gibson's office, that's Congressman Gibson to you, Gibson's office, and told the aide that answered the phone that those remarks would make a cat laugh. Okay. Bob says, if the Republicans think that the president's action is unconstitutional, why aren't they talking about taking the dispute to the Supreme Court?
They are.
Yeah, they are talking about it, and goodness knows what will happen there, although one could predict. Don says, after 6 years of refusing to cooperate with President Obama on any progressive legislation, the Republican leadership threatens, quote, not to cooperate with the president on any progressive legislation in the future. if he goes it alone on immigration reform. Mitch McConnell and John Boehner accuse the president of poisoning the well of cooperation. Well, what well of cooperation? Sounds like Brer Rabbit and the Briar Patch.
That's good. That's good.
Irene says, Obama gave one of the best speeches in his presidency. This was a necessary move. JFK would be proud. Look for more action by Obama due to the GOP's inaction. The next 2 years will not be good for the GOP. 2016 will be a boon for progressives. And I believe, well, no, that's a second for Ryan, so he doesn't get it. And Michael says, could this be a Democratic strategy, including the Republican sweep in the last election with the Democrats being silent? The president issues this directive, the Republicans react anti-immigrant, and the Democrats sweep into the White House and Congress in 2016. And that's that.
All right. Let us go to other issues, and a reminder that you can comment, roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. We talked about the Bill Cosby story, and we've been talking about this for much of the week. I briefly mentioned this yesterday, and there's a major article about it in the Washington Post today. About the Smithsonian now being drawn into this debate. There is an art loan from Bill Cosby, which is with many paintings, I believe at least 60, that were on loan to the National Museum of African Art. And it is an exhibit that it will be up for some time, and with much of the work being donated by Bill and Camille Cosby. It is the reason that the couple was interviewed on NPR over the weekend, in addition to a question that Scott Simon asked about the rape allegations. So now there is some question as to whether the Smithsonian should pull the exhibit, and but there is also so there's two stories to talk about. That one, that being brought into the issue, but also I don't know if anyone saw this. I know people here on the panel did, but if in our audience there was an interview that Bill Cosby gave at the Smithsonian National Museum of African Art on November 6th. In which he was talking about, he sat down with the AP because he thought the AP was a reputable news organization and would not dig into those unpleasant accusations.
And the interviewer was an arts reporter, not a political or crime reporter.
Right. So they now are showing the coverage, the footage that was taken out of the interview in which Bill Cosby asked the interviewer not to include that segment in which he asked the questions and said that basically saying, I thought you were reputable and you wouldn't include that.
If you want to be serious, you won't include this. And all it is Bill Cosby saying, I have no response. There is no response. There is no response. It's very mighty strange, as they say. And Camille is sitting there, his lovely wife, and she's kind of fidgeting, looking off into space. It's very uncomfortable.
The reporter, the Washington Post makes the case, who covers art and cultural issues in the nation's capital, deserves credit for asking the hard questions. Lou Ferrara, an AP vice president, said it was his duty to ask the question as a reporter and journalist. Cosby may have hoped that as an arts reporter, he would limit his inquiries to art matters. Arts reporting is often assumed to be soft reporting, a feel-good beat on the edge of the real news business. Sometimes this is true, especially on television, where stories about the arts are vanishingly rare and almost always are used as inspirational postludes to the main event, which is all about strife, mayhem, and the downward spiral of civilization. But Cosby's effort to hold the hard questions at bay also premised on assumptions about the larger field of arts and culture. That is, that it's a safe place where the expectation of old-fashioned civility and the ubiquity of uplifting narratives would give cover to a man increasingly under pressure from dark allegations about his past sexual behavior. Panel.
I was talking yesterday to a very good friend and a sagacious man. And he says, I know I shouldn't feel this way, but I feel sorry for this guy. He said, and he said, because all of us, every one of us has done things in our past. Now, we haven't raped 15 women or whatever, 16 women, but all of us look
allegedly.
Back. Allegedly, that's right. Look back on our past and we say, are there any things that we would rather that were not made public? And I don't know if anybody in this room is excused from this discussion. But I understand that point. He wasn't asking. My friend was not asking for the, he wasn't saying this guy's a good guy or any of that. He was just saying it's a time, it gives us all pause and the ability to reflect back on what we may have done in our own pasts. During the Yom Kippur services and Rosh Hashanah services, there's always this long list of things that we shouldn't have done. And boy, if you get away with any of them, you're in good shape. It's a larger philosophical question than about this guy. It's just about how we conduct ourselves.
I will say that Cosby's making it easy not to feel sorry for him. Although you may be inclined to do that, his manner is imperious. He is acting really arrogant and just clueless, just absolutely clueless. Why do you care about this? You're not serious if you ask me. He's not serious if he asks about 15 alleged rapes. I'm sorry. Really, really bad things, and I'm actually more inclined to be against him after seeing him.
Doesn't he have a performance coming up tonight?
He's canceled. No, the show is still going on.
Yeah, the show is still on. The tour is on, and he has dates through May of 2015 that are scheduled.
And that's my next question, what I find interesting. Does the fact that he did—
Which are selling, by the way.
Yeah. I mean, let's say he really did this, okay, and it's not alleged. He raped 15 women. Let's say that's true. Does that invalidate his wonderful humor in writing? Does it invalidate the value of a really important and neglected area of art that the Smithsonian was interested in? Does the Smithsonian really have to say, we don't want your art because that would say we're in favor of rape? Is that really true?
There was I thought in this Washington Post piece, they quoted Ta-Nehisi Coates, who was a writer for The Atlantic, in a November 19th piece, in which she says, quote, lacking physical evidence, adjudicating rape accusations is a murky business for journalists. But believing Bill Cosby does not require you to take one person's word over another.
Oh, yeah, this is good.
It requires you to take one person's word over 15 others. Mm-hmm.
Silence. Bill would like that.
Could anybody, I mean, look, in the beginning I said when it was one or two, I said, okay, we've got to give this guy the benefit of the doubt. Because from the time of Joseph in the Bible, false accusations have been made about people.
Now, it's important to note, just real quickly, Alan, but it's important to note that these allegations of these 15 women have been around for, in some cases, 10 years.
Well, the tabs this morning have specific, finite, and then he told me, he took my hand and he told me to touch him here and this kind of thing, in them. So it's very specific stuff now. Nevertheless, there are a lot of people in out there who might want to get in on the game.
Well, I mean, I actually think some of this is just irrelevant at this point. And my questions are, even if he came out and said, yes, I did it, does that mean we can't like his sitcom anymore? We can't look at his art in the Smithsonian?
Well, could you look at this benign figure?
It's an actor. It's an act. He's not Huxtable. He's Bill Cosby. Bill Cosby may be bad. Does that mean his character is? Do we really have to invalidate everything?
When you look at him... By the way, I have just want to say one thing. If NBC continued with this and put this one night thing on, you would have the largest audience in the history of this country, in my opinion, on. What does that tell you? I assume that that's the case. I don't think there would be.
Well, it was a series.
There was a series, but there was supposed to be a kickoff one.
No, there was a concert by Netflix that would have been that would have been streamed. A concert, the same concert that he's doing throughout the country.
Yeah. So I'm asking
you. Are you going to go?
No.
Do you ever listen, Alan, to Richard Wagner, who was a terrible anti-Semite?
As you know, no. And as you know, on many occasions, I've spoken on this very subject on fund drives and other places and say he was a scurrilous anti-Semite. And I have had, I think he's the devil, which is why his work is so profound and brilliant. you know, there are people who will not go to a Wagner concert. And in Israel, when it was brought for the first time, people stood up and threw chairs.
Is this the same then? We can't laugh at Bill Cosby anymore.
Well, I don't know. Is it forever? I mean, the thing is that in the case, he's 77. So in the time that we are talking about, that in 10, 15, even 5 years, even 2 years, that we go back to watching these programs for what they are. But we're talking about a network and several networks, as well as an arts institution who have to make a decision. Is it worth it for them to get into a debate and to be accused of something that is probably the farthest thing from their mind, i.e. supporting someone who is accused of these acts?
Well, Joe, you know, it isn't only whether the network, but the network makes its money from sponsors who put their names on these programs. And in my opinion, that's where it starts to hurt them, because somebody says, no, we can't have our name. We can't have our sneaker, or we can't have our jeans or whatever else associated with this guy. And that's why often it's not only right or wrong. It's pure business decisions.
Well, it is a business decision. I mean, Netflix obviously does not have advertisers, but it does have but it has subscribers. So if the subscribers, just like the magazine subscription, so if the subscriber says, okay, I'm offended by this nudity that is in the magazine, and I'm going to rip it up and return it to you, and I'm going to cancel my subscription. Well, that's one thing. Mm-hmm. But if you have an arts institution such as the Smithsonian, who, assuming that this is not only partially funded by government money, but also by underwriting support, that where does that lead that institution? But I think Rosemary also makes a good point as to do you deprive the audience of seeing this important work?
Isn't it like Tiger Woods, who, okay, proven, you know, real horrible kind of pig and all that. And yes,
but not a criminal.
Well, yeah, that's true. But we're talking values now, what they represent. He lost for a while, at least, all of his endorsements.
JK?
And then do we not watch him play golf? Do we exclude him because he's not part of the wholesomeness of the
sport? Well, it's an individual decision. Now, JK says, should a priest that molested children 15 years ago get to say, don't look at that?
No.
I don't understand.
No. He said, Joe, right?
Right.
That to the AP reporter, don't look at that, or, you know, don't talk about that.
And, all right.
So this guy is saying,
yes,
should the priest get to say that?
No.
They're both crimes.
Right.
Yeah,
well, you know, and the other thing.
Well, the priest did say it for a long time.
Remember the Charlie Sheen nonsense? And the tiger blood and all of that? What do you call it?
Nonsense is a pretty good word.
Yeah, I mean, weirdness, right?
Weirdness.
But
yeah.
he was, again, allegedly abusing drugs,
mm-hmm.
and he was going out, and he was hopefully there was a cause for that behavior. So he went out on a tour, on that Tiger Blood tour, whatever it was, and made money off that.
But don't you think self-destruction is far different than destruction of others?
I agree.
That's a good point.
Yeah, that's a great. Although there were children and women involved, yes.
Yes, that's the point.
What crimes was Charlie Sheen accused of?
Drug use.
Yeah, mainly drug use, but there were also violent acts that were done in the New York hotel rooms and in the Plaza Hotel during an Eloise breakfast.
Your memory is really excellent.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it is. Aileen, by the way, said of Cosby, do we not look at Picasso's work because he was a misogynist? Or, sorry, Alan, listen to Wagner because he was a scurrilous anti-Semite?
Wagner,
By the way, I too am Jewish. No, I think we have to separate art from real life. But what's great about her is that she's writing to us from Tulum, Mexico.
Cool.
Neat.
Neat.
Yeah.
Anything else? Okay. Or do we want to? Are there any letters, or do you want to move on?
Well, no. I think that's sort of it.
Yeah.
All right. We will move on to our last topic for today. And as soon as I can actually access it, I will get to it. Here we go. Still getting used to the new machine. I apologize. Yeah, I know. Thank you. The drug stings.
Yeah.
Oh, you ready? Sorry. More judges question use of fake drugs in sting cases. The three men. So basically, the concern here is that when you use these stash house stings. They have sent more than 1,000 of the country's most, quote, violent and hardened criminals to prison, according to the New York Times, sometimes for terms of decades, according to the Bureau, which has made a specialty of the ruses. The agency says that it has conducted about 365 of these stings over the last decade, removing from the streets career criminals who are willing to kill and be killed with less risk to agents and neighbors than raids on real stash houses, but this year the judge in the Los Angeles case dismissed the charges against two of the defendants on the rarely invoked grounds of outrageous government conduct.
Well, you know, I worked for a congressman who I dearly loved, and he was called into a room with a phony sheik and a two-way mirror. And we call this abscam. They offered him a bribe, which he refused, by the way, and he went out of the room. They said that's your money. And he said, no, I don't want it. The guy who led him into the room took the money and then later testified that he shared the money with the congressman. But nobody saw it. It was an outrageous, in my opinion, abscam was an outrageous violation because they made the crime happen. They literally made the crime happen. Forget about the fact that that the lying person who brought him into the room later testified that you know he had shared the money, but it didn't even show that. But what I'm talking about is when government makes things happen. On the other hand, 1,000 heinous people who are poisoning our kids, there's something to be said about it.
How refreshing that we have a federal official who's actually looking out for people against an outrageously acting government. I wish we had a few more of them looking over NSA or somebody in Congress looking at this. Yeah, they could have gotten those 1,000 another way. It would have been a little more dangerous and inconvenient. But
if they were sitting here, they would say, no, we couldn't have.
Well, I think that that's not true because these stings are not something that have always gone on. They're of relatively new mintage.
We are out of time, but I want to thank everybody who took part and joined our conversation. You can still do so, wamc.org/roundtable. Alan, Rosemary, Raymond, thank you very much for a very nice hour, and have a great weekend, and we'll be back on Monday.
You too.
Roundtable continues.